Start chapter 5 today. Woohoo! We're flying through this book. Hebrews chapter 5 really is a continuation of chapter 4, where in chapter 4 at the end he began to talk about the high priest and the high priest that gives us the privilege to confidently draw near to the throne of God. And we know that chapter 5 is related to chapter 4 because of the first word of chapter 5, verse 1. First word of chapter 5, verse 1 is 4. So we're going to read up through verse 8, and then we'll, or verse 9, and then we'll, actually, I guess verse 10. Can't read my verse references very well. We're going to read through verse 10, and then we'll go back and talk about what we're going to talk about. It says, "For every high priest chosen among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. So also Christ did not exalt himself to be made high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, 'You are my son, today I have begotten you.' In another, as he says also in another place, 'You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek.' In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek." So, again, this is related to the section before, and I think it's directly related to let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. I believe that's that now is what he's explaining, is that why can we now draw near to the presence of God, The King James says boldly, go boldly into the throne of grace. Why is it that can happen now? Because that really hasn't been a situation. Even again, in the Old Testament or Old Testament times, the high priest didn't boldly enter into the Holy of Holies. I'm sure there was some degree of trepidation on his part because of the fact that he's risking death when he walked into the place. And so that's pretty big deal. It wasn't a situation where everyone or anyone, just any Joe, could enter that place. Only one person, one time a year, could get into that place, could get that close to God. And so this is a radical new idea for the Jews that are hearing this. To be able to boldly enter to the presence of God is radically new for them, because that's not something that they grew up with. It's not something they would have grown up understanding. What they grew up understanding was that it's the high priest who enters the presence of God, and he does it once a year. And he doesn't do it boldly. So that's what they would have known. So this idea of boldly entering, while we read it and we say, yeah, that's great. We have that access. We've grown up having that access. For those of us who've been in church all of our lives, we've grown up having that access. You know, I mean, one of the first things we learned when I was a kid growing up in church was, you know, God's everywhere and you can pray to him and he hears your prayers and all that kind of, you hear that over and over and over again. So that it's not that new for us. So it really doesn't require explanation. I don't think it requires explanation for us. But for a Jewish person in first century, it would require explanation. This has to be explained because this is a radical new concept for them that they would not understand and they wouldn't agree with. I mean, when they would have read, "Let us there with confidence draw near to the throne of grace," there would have been pushback on that. So that's why he's going to say for or because. So that's why this draws out of the art.
The boldness, the emphasis of an attitude, just so nervousness and trepidation versus rest, relief.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yep, that's true. And so that is actually that's not a bad correlation at all. The fact is that the reason that we have boldness is because of the work of Him, not our own work, not our own work. And so that does lead to the rest, does lead to boldness. Yeah, John.
We have that, and the answer is because God is satisfied.
Right. Exactly. And so as he explains then why it is that we have this boldness, why it is we can have this boldness, and we look again back at the great high priest that was referred to, you know, chapter, the section that is really tied to starts back in chapter 4, verse 14, which is this. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Two responses. Let us hold fast our confession. Why do we hold fast our confession? For we do not have a high priest who is able to sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Second response. Let us, then with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. So when you're trying to interpret the Bible, you know, you let language be language. And so you see those two let us's, right? So here's the fact. The truth is, since then we have a great high priest, what do we do? One, let us hold fast our confession. That's one. And then you got a four. Hold fast our confession. Four, our high priest has been tempted like we are, yet without sin. Second, let us do what? Let us, with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace. And here's the four. Here's the four. So this, if you were to parallel those two things, this is the four for the second lettuce. I mean, it's like a salad, I guess. It's the four for the second lettuce. So this is the four for the second lettuce. So it draws all the way back to the great high priest. And so now he's going to explain the great high priest. He's going to actually expound on the great high priest and why then does that great high priest then give us confidence to enter into his presence? Why does the fact that Jesus being the great high priest, how does that give us confidence? Why should that give us confidence? That's what he's explaining in these first 10 verses of chapter 5. Ron?
I just need to make it clear that every Jew had access to God in prayer.
Yeah,
it's just their access was not total like it is now. So every good Jew prays, and he's praying directly to God, not through a high priest.
Yeah,
just don't overemphasize that. It's like that. You know, everybody talks about calling him Abba, mm-hmm. calling God Abba, like Daddy. But that's not the way it is at all. Every Jew calls his parents Abba and Ima. It's not a special.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I would agree with him to a point, but not really. I'm going to take exception to what he said because I'm taking exception because of what's being explained in this text. What's being explained in this text is that access to the throne of God. It is that entrance to the Holy of Holies. That's what's being talked about here.
Yes.
So, yes, the Jew had access to God through prayer, but not the kind of access. They would not have understood the access to the Holy of Holies like it's being explained here. So yes. That's why I'm stressing it, and I will continue to stress it just as heavily, because this is a big deal for them. Yeah, they had access to prayer. They could pray, but they did not have access to his presence into the Holy of Holies, and that's a radical new thing. We now can boldly enter that.
I agree with that.
Okay, good.
You better mark the calendar.
Well, I'm right. He should agree for something's right.
I think this is a twofold deal. You know, you'd have to get this past the regular everyday people, but then wouldn't the leadership of the Jewish church like this too?
Well, this book isn't written for Jewish leadership. This book is written for Jewish believers or almost believers, people who
These are not people who have rejected Christ. These are people who have either accepted or are seriously considering who Jesus is.
But they'd be a stumbling block.
Absolutely. That's why they killed him, because they stumbled over him. Absolutely, this would be the Jewish priesthood, the Sanhedrin, those who are leaders of the Jews, and would have clearly rejected all of this. Because, you know, in their mind, Jesus was nothing but a false Messiah, someone who stood up to, and he was a problem for them, not a savior for them. So they wouldn't have gotten it. But that's not who this book is written to. This book is written to Jewish people who I think for a large part, they were believers who were struggling with figuring out, so how does this faith thing work? How does it work? Are we required to obtain grace by keeping the law, or do we keep the law ceremonially because of the grace we've obtained? That's really what's at play here, is do I work myself to heaven, or do I rely on the one who's already done the work? That's what's at play. And what the author is doing is saying, we rely on the one who worked already because his work is superior to any work we could ever do. And he's showing the superiority of Christ to so many different things. So that's what he's doing as he writes this book, is showing the superiority. Again, we've already seen superiority to angels, to Moses, to Joshua. Now we're really to Aaron and to all the high priests. That's what's being displayed here, is Jesus is superior to not only Moses, not only Joshua, not only Aaron, but also to all of the high priests that have ever served in that office. He's superior. Because here's the deal again, because while all those folks have served as priests, Jesus served as priest and as a son. And none of those were sons in the sense that Jesus is son. He's actually going to say that here in just a little bit, so I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but that's the point. The point is, and also, the priesthood that Jesus is a priest after is not the Aaronic priesthood. It's not the high priesthood of Aaron. Can't be. The reason it can't be is because Jesus is not a Levite, and only Levites could function as high priest. Only Levite, and you can't change that. That's from Exodus all the way. You know, that's Passover and following, when the Levites were chosen, taken in place of the firstborn. That's a deal that was set by God, that the priests had to be Levites. And trust me, it's a big deal for someone who's not a Levite to act as a Levite. Ask Uzziah. Just ask Uzziah about that. Uzziah is not a Levite. A Judite. He's from Judah. And Uzziah goes in and offers sacrifice, a burning in the place of the Levites, and God strikes him with leprosy, and he dies because of that. So a king, a Judite, trying to serve as a Levite is a bad thing.
Or
a Benjamite. Yeah. The other one would be Saul. Saul's from Benjamin. Saul's tribe of Benjamin. But yeah, again, a non-Levite putting himself in place of the priest, God takes that very seriously. So I believe that if Jesus was offering himself as a priest after the Aaronic priesthood, he would have been disqualified, because he's not. But he's not a priest after Aaron, he's a priest after Melchizedek, which even Melchizedek priesthood precedes the Aaronic priesthood. So it's even a superior priesthood too. That's we're getting way ahead of myself. I haven't got past four yet. I haven't got past the first word. We are four at this point. So, and it's not my fault. It's not my fault. I didn't get anything out until he started talking, and him. So anyway, it's four. It's four. So this points back, and what he's doing now is explaining. He's explaining why it is that this high priest, this priest, Jesus, gives us that confidence to enter into God's presence where the other priests didn't. even the high priest himself would enter, not confidently, not boldly, but anybody else who tried to enter would have, you know, that wouldn't have gone well for them at all. So, so how can that happen? How can that? Well, he's going to explain that now. He's going to explain why Jesus offers that access, offers that confidence. And it's because of the work that he's done, because of what he's accomplished. That's what he's going to share. And so there's two things, actually, in the four. One is because he's a different kind of priest. Second is because of the work he's accomplished. Those are the two big deals. If you were to outline what he's going to say, it's that. So the first thing he says is basically this. Jesus offers that confidence because he's a different kind of priest. So here's what he's going to go. He's going to talk about how the priests became high priest. That's the first thing. He says, so for every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. So the first thing we see is they're appointed, right? It's not the office of high priest was not a usurped or taken upon yourself office. Even Aaron didn't ask for the job of high priest. If you go clear back to Exodus, where the high priest is chosen, Aaron and Moses are Levites. We get that. But who would be the rightful, who do you think would be the best choice to be the high priest for Israel? Moses. You know, you would think it'd be Moses. He's the guy. He's the one who's interceding. He's the one there. But yet God doesn't choose Moses. God chooses. He chooses Aaron to be the high priest. Aaron did not choose himself for that. Aaron didn't. Aaron wasn't a righteous man and didn't commend himself to God for that. Aaron had actually demonstrated his unrighteousness. How had Aaron demonstrated his unrighteousness before he's chosen to be high priest? He built a golden calf. He built a golden calf, and he said to Israel, here's your God. Here's your God, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. No, that's not your God who brought you up. So, there was pressure. The people put pressure on him. Well, he could have said no. He could have, you know, there are probably other artisans and other craftsmen that could have built a golden calf, yet Aaron doesn't. So it's not because of Aaron's righteousness that he's chosen. It's because God said, Aaron, you are going to be the high priest, and all the high priests are going to come from your family from here on out. So that position is not originally understood, was not a position that was obtained because you wanted it or because you picked yourself to be high priest. That was a choosing of God. Go ahead.
Or because you deserved it.
How you say that?
Because God had just tested him in the manner of the golden calf. God picked him for his reasons, not because he was especially
right.
Okay. Worthy of it.
Right. Okay. I thought.
That sounds like just like him choosing
Jesus. Oh, it does, doesn't it? And maybe even believers today. I think there's a lesson there. It doesn't have anything to do with our own righteousness. There's nothing that commends us or we deserve it.
How odd that God should choose the Jews.
Where they goyim and noyim. So I understand what Ron is saying now. I thought Ron was saying because Aaron did deserve it. No, he's saying because he didn't deserve it, God put him in place anyway. So, yeah. Yep. So.
Not there yet.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there eventually. Sometime this year. So the high priest is appointed to that position. Now, actually, as you hit first century Judaism, the high priesthood doesn't act like it did back in Aaron's day and shortly thereafter. By the time you hit Jesus' day, the high priesthood has kind of morphed into an elected position, if you will.
And corrupt.
Definitely corrupt. But so like in Jesus' day, You have kind of two high priests that are mentioned. Who are the two high priests that are mentioned? Annas and Caiaphas. Right? I mean, I said it right this time. I didn't say it like that. Annas and Caiaphas are the, and so Annas is Caiaphas' father, but Caiaphas is the one serving as high priest that year. Remember it says that year Caiaphas was serving as high priest. Well, by the time you get to first century, it's actually a choice of the Sanhedrin, a choice of the Sadducees. The Sadducees are the ones who are basically choosing who serves as high priest for that period of time. But
they
still,
they were all Levites.
All Levites and all descendants of Aaron. That didn't go away. The fact that the high priest was a descendant of Aaron did not go away. That stayed. But
David's time, they were descendants of Zadok.
Yep. And from David's time, not only Aaron, but Zadok. And after, you know, post back into the land, they're descendants of Joshua, the high priest in Zechariah. Remember, there's two guys mentioned, Zerubbabel and Zechariah. Zerubbabel and Joshua. Joshua's the high priest, so then every other high priest would have come from him. Not the Joshua back in Exodus. That's not the same Joshua. This is another Joshua later on. That's in Zechariah.
Was that a prophecy?
Say again?
Was that a prophecy? Cutting off a branch.
No, it's just after he went back, Joshua is the high priest who goes back to the land. No other high priest comes back into the land, and so he's the one who's lifted up in.
Well, what do you mean other high priest?
Well, there's no other brothers or anything that comes. He's the high priest, so then every other high priest would have come from him from that point on.
It couldn't have been from a different Levite.
No, I don't believe so. I think if you were to trace high priest genealogies, lineage, from return from exile on, it's a descendant of Joshua himself. Not Joshua in, because Joshua's not a Levite. That Joshua is not a Levite. This Joshua in Zechariah is a Levite. So that's really not very important, except to say that even in first century, those who were high priests were still descendants of Aaron, Zadok, Joshua. They were still those descendants, still had to be meet that qualification. But as far as there being just one high priest who served till he died, that changed. Because the high priest would have been one who was a descendant of Aaron, but was elected by the Sadducees and not by the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin is made up of three or four groups of people. Sadducees, Pharisees, scribes, and lawyers. Some say the scribes and lawyers were the same group of people. I think they may have been a little different. But the Sadducees were the priests. They were the ones who served as priests. And they were the ones who kept the priesthood and stuff going. So it would have been the Sadducees that basically selected who high priest was for that period of time or that year. And apparently, because the text tells us he was high priest that year, it seems like maybe it was a yearly. Voted on a new high priest.
Spread it around. Yeah.
So wouldn't that make him illegitimate high priest?
Well, because he's a descendant of Aaron, not necessarily, but it definitely gave the choice of high priest to man and not to God at that point, where God was the one who appointed Aaron and everybody else. But so it did make it a little different. But as originally designed, it was God who chose the high priest, not man that chose himself into that position. And that's what's at play here. Is it's God who chooses the high priest. And in some sense, if God is sovereign in everything, then he actually was the one who was putting the high priest in position. I just wanted to recognize the difference. Aaron basically served until he died. And high priest basically, Old Testament did that. Not so much in the New Testament, not so much in first century. That wasn't going on. Annas was still alive, even though Caiaphas was serving as high priest.
Right.
Well, and I think that's partly because he's moving away from that model of, you know, of how he's represented or how he's the intermediary between God and man. He was no longer going to be that high priest, but Jesus, the other high priest.
Anyway, from the time of Pompeii, in reality, it was the Romans that were choosing the high priest.
Yes. No. Yep. Jesus could not have served as an Aaronic priest. He could not have served as a high priest after the order of Aaron. And the author of Hebrews makes it real clear he's not a priest after the order of Aaron. He's a priest from the order of Melchizedek, which is significantly different. So he's not a high priest from Aaron. He couldn't have been. If he would have established himself, if Jesus would have attempted to establish himself as an Aaronic high priest, he would have violated the law.
I'll wait till you get there.
And it is a big deal. That's what I was saying about Uzziah. Uzziah, when he usurped that position, was stricken with leprosy and died because of his usurpation of that position. Saul, when he usurped that position, because Saul's not a Levite, Saul's a Benjamite, when he usurps that position, that was one of the things that led to the spirit being removed and the kingship taken away from him and David being established as king. So there is no, but Jesus never claims to be an Aaronic high priest. He claims to be, or the claim is made about he's a priest from the order of Melchizedek, which is a different priesthood that accomplished the same tasks. We will look at what Melchizedek did eventually. I don't think we're going to get there today, but we will look at what Melchizedek did. And Melchizedek did exactly what's described in chapter 5, verse 1. That's what Melchizedek did. And we can show that. We can demonstrate that as we look at what Melchizedek did, even with Abraham back in Genesis.
Do you think he really believed
it? Absolutely. Melchizedek is a godly example of a godly priest. Absolutely. Uzziah, or your king Uzziah.
Yeah.
He may have had good intentions, but he knew he was violating the law. He knew he was usurping the place of the priest.
Well, I mean,
and you can't. Yeah, that's the guy who tried to hold it up. That's on the way back from David, so that's not the same guy. That's Uzzah. There's So, anyway, that's the guy who touches the ark, trying to hold it up, and ends up dying. When they're bringing the ark back from the Philistines, and it's on a cart. First of all, problem not being carried the way it's supposed to be carried. It's supposed to be carried by priests on poles, Levites on poles. That's how it's supposed to be carried. They didn't carry it that way. They put it on a cart and are bringing it back that way. It starts to fall. He reaches up and touches it to catch it. Done. So anyway, we're going to go on. Thank you, Brian, for laughing. So back to the different high priests. We're back on chapter 5, verse 1. So he says, for every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God. So the fact is he's chosen among men and he's appointed to act. It's not, I'm going to be high priest, by the way. It's not going to happen. He's chosen. Who is he chosen by? Well, originally that high priest was chosen by God himself. It was God who made the distinction, Aaron, you're the high priest. Because that probably wouldn't have been the choice we would have made. It probably wouldn't have been the choice Israel would have made. The choice that probably would have been made would have been Moses, you're the high priest. But that's not the choice that was made. And it was made not on the basis of Aaron's own righteousness, good word, or his character. He had demonstrated flaws in his character. He had demonstrated unrighteousness and that he didn't deserve this position. And yet God said, you're the high priest. You're the high priest.
To me, he probably wouldn't choose.
Aaron would not probably have chosen himself. But God chose him and God placed him in that position. God is the one who has him anointed. God's the one who says he's going to be king. And so that's that. It's not this person's own thing that commends himself to be this. It's because God chooses who that high priest is going to be. Well, there's no difference in that and in Jesus, because Jesus doesn't put himself in that position either. It's God who puts him there. It's God who puts him there. So in that sense, there is a similarity between the high priest of Israel and the high priest, Jesus the high priest, because God appointed the high priest and God appointed Jesus. How's that work? Well, that's explained to us in verse 5. So Christ did not exalt himself to be made high priest, but was appointed by him who said two things: you are my son, today I've begotten you. And he says another place, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So those are the two distinctions of between Jesus and high priest. But again, the similarity is this, that while the high priest was appointed by God, so was Jesus appointed by God to that position. But there's a significant difference in what that high priest, the high priest of men, and Jesus. The high priest for men would have been chosen by God, but not because he was a son, not as a son, but because he was not a son of God, but a son of the high priest, right? That's where the high priests came from. They were in line with the son of, they were one of the sons of the current high priest, would have been the next high priest, unless all those sons are dead, and then God puts another one in place. When did that happen? Well, with Samuel, right? It happened with Samuel. So there's that going. But the second issue is that not only was he is a son, but he's not a priest after the order of Aaron. He's a priest after the order of Melchizedek. So those are the distinctions. Those are the distinctives that makes him different than the other high priests. So there's, in some sense, there's a similarity because they were appointed, he's appointed. But there's a big difference because he's a son and he's after the order of Melchizedek. They are not direct sons of God, and they are not the order of Aaron. So there's a significant difference. Yeah, John?
Verse 4, he's called of God. And of course, not Aaron. Aaron's piece of the law.
There is, and so to point back to 4, this is also shows that it's not, it says no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. So Aaron was Aaron, and again, it wasn't like Aaron said, I want to be high priest. I want to be the guy. It was God who said, Aaron, you're the high priest. That's how it started. It wasn't Jesus putting his hand there and said, hey, I want to be the high priest. It was not that going. It was God who said, because Jesus is God, you can say, yeah, he did. But the idea is Jesus, the man, the Son of God, didn't usurp a place. He was appointed to that place by the Father to act as the high priest. And so it's not a usurped position. It's a position he was appointed to. So how then does the high priest then, how does he identify with people? How does he identify with those who he's going before? Well, he says this, verse 2, he can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. So he's talking about now the high priest, the human high priest, has a connection with those he's interceding for, because he himself is a sinful man, because he himself has weaknesses and is foolish at times. He can understand the foolish and the weak. He can understand them, and so he doesn't have to be harsh. He can be gentle with them. He can be understanding of them and not condemn them for the things they do, but actually eagerly represent them before God when they are doing those things. He can do that because he is in a position that he's also, I like the words he uses, he himself is beset with weaknesses. So the idea is he has these same problems. It's the same word there, beset, is the word that's used in Hebrews chapter 12:2, Let us lay aside the sin that so easily besets us. The idea of beset is to be weighed down by, or to be held back by. So the high priest, even himself, was held back by weakness, was held back by with the same kind of weaknesses that those he represented did. There's a big difference between that high priest and Jesus, because the high priest then had to be concerned about offering sacrifice for his own sin. That's one of the significant differences between that high priest on earth and Jesus' high priest. Jesus never had to be concerned about offering a sacrifice for his own sin. Point back to Hebrews chapter, the first three verses of Hebrews, where it says, after making purification for sin, he sat down on the right hand of majesty on high. He never had to worry about his own sin that needed to be taken care of. He was sinlessly perfect, lived a sinlessly perfect life. There was no hint of sin. He was tempted in all points like we are, but without sin. And we're going to get that in a little bit. Hello? So the high priest, all the priests, all the people, there was a daily sacrifice that took place, right? And this is something that I've kind of wondered about. I don't know the answer to this. Because there was daily sacrifice, the priest would have had to, he has to participate in that daily sacrifice as well. He has to do that. That's his responsibility of him. You know, if you read Leviticus, all those sacrifices that applied to all the people also applied to the priests. So the high priest had to have been, was supposed to have been offering sacrifice for those things all along.
So is that where we get short
accounts? I don't think so. I think that's a different thing, which maybe we'll talk about in a second. But I think So when you get to the Day of Atonement and you get to the high priest the one day a year entering to the Holy of Holies, this is something I've always questioned. I had a question about. If he's been doing sacrifices every day of the year, and he why would he be afraid to enter into the Holy of Holies? Why would he be afraid to do that? And so the thing I've landed on is, there is no sacrifice in the sacrificial system that deals with willful trespass. The answer for willful trespass is death in every situation. If you read the law, when someone willfully trespassed the law, the answer was not a sacrifice. The answer was death. And so here's what I think. If he had willfully transgressed, then he needed to be scared to death, because he's going into the presence of God and the likelihood of death is pretty high there, because who knows? Who knows really whether you willfully transgress the law or not? God does. And when you're going directly into his presence, that could be a big deal. So I think there's the scary part. Yeah.
I think everybody willfully transgresses the word of God. I think historically what the deal was whether you ritually prepared properly. And there was a whole procedure that had to be gone through that morning to make sure that they were ritually prepared. The proper clothes, the proper ablutions.
He wasn't what ablution means.
There were certain things they had to eat, they had to do baptisms. They had to be ritually cleansed in a number of ways. And again, their clothing had to be exactly right and spotless. And he had a whole retinue of people, I think at least 24 hours, maybe 48 hours before that, to keep track of everything he put on and make sure every last hair of his head was dunked in that mikveh before. That's the baptistry.
I think it's that more than the other.
What about the fact you said he did daily? But as soon as you're forgiveness for the sins, or one day, 2 minutes later, you know, you've already started accumulating.
Yeah.
So there's something that's obviously
going. Yeah. And so, probably, like I said, I've often wondered about that whole deal. That whole, you know, it seems to me you could never, the high priest could never enter on that day and not face certain death.
And many of the high priests were evil people.
Yeah. Yeah, Caiaphas. Yeah. It does. It speaks of the fear of God, but I don't know that Israel got it. Here's part of, I think, the issue, especially as they get to the first century. After Solomon's temple, remember in Solomon's temple when it was dedicated, smoke filled the whole temple. You couldn't go in. Well, from Zerubbabel's temple on, that doesn't happen. When the temple is finished in Zerubbabel's day, and it's dedicated, there is no smoke that fills that temple. I think it has something to do with the glory departing, absolutely, with the Ichabod that was the glory's departed. So I think the building was important, but I don't know that the Holy of Holies was, you know, what it was in Solomon's temple. The reason I say that is because there is no smoke. There is no record of it being filled with smoke and the presence of God descending on that temple the way it did on Solomon's temple. There's no record of that.
Well, I'm just sitting there thinking, I can really see how somebody who was a priest would become very callous with things to God if they perform these procedures without faith. Just like someone who goes to church reads the Bible without faith, becomes callous.
Well, and so the issue with all of Israel always was God wanted their heart. It was never about just do the law. It was always about listen, treasure, do the law. And Israel never really got that whole part. They got the do part. In fact, they didn't even get the do part very well, but they tried to get the do part. And so it became really Israel, the Jewish religion became check your boxes. Get your boxes checked. You do these. That's what the Pharisees are doing. The Pharisees are checking boxes on the outside. That's why Jesus says, you know, you're whitewashed sepulchers. Great on the outside, but inside you're full of dead men's bones, because what they were doing wasn't from a heart of obedience. It was a heart of pride and of self-exaltation. In some senses, that's what's going on with the priesthood as well. That's the high priest. It's about, you know, exalting self and being recognized as the high priest. But again, let's get back to what is being said here. What's being said here is that there are similarities to Jesus and the high priest, but there are also some significant differences. Similarity is they're both appointed by God. Differences are the high priest had to offer sacrifice for himself. Jesus didn't. The high priest served as a priest after the order of Aaron. Jesus serves as a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Different priesthood. In fact, later on, we're going to find out that the priesthood, Melchizedek priesthood, is superior to the Aaronic priesthood because it precedes the Aaronic priesthood. The author is going to make that case that because Jesus is a priest at the order of Melchizedek, his priesthood is actually a superior priesthood to that of Aaron's because Melchizedek's priesthood came before the Aaronic priesthood did. So even in that, he's superior. But that's not the point being made here yet. The point being made here is there's a difference between the high priest of the Jews and Jesus, the high priest. And I think it's important to recognize that because Jesus is appointed by God and because he's from Melchizedek, after Melchizedek, he is not usurping a place that's not right for him to usurp. That's really important to get here because if Jesus, what was Melchizedek was a priest king or a king priest. Jesus is a king priest. He's from the line of Judah, which is the king, He's a priest after the order of Melchizedek, which makes him a king priest, just like Melchizedek was a king priest. So that gives him the rightful position as that without having to usurp a place that should have been a Levitical position, a Levitical function. So next week we'll actually look at Melchizedek a little bit and see what he did, because he did exactly what's described in chapter 5, verse 1, where he offered gifts and sacrifices for sin. He did exactly that. That's how he served God. He's the king of Salem. Where's Salem? Well, it's the king. He probably was at Jerusalem. That's where he was king at, was the city of Jerusalem, which is the same. So where was he doing his sacrifice? He was doing it right there, probably where the temple would have been. He was right there. He's probably right there where Abraham offered Isaac, probably right there on Mount Moriah. That same place is probably where he was doing, he was serving as in his role of priest, just like the Aaronic priests served at that place as well. So there's, again, another similarity, but the fact is Jesus is not usurping a place that's not his, because that would be a violation of law. But in no case ever did Jesus violate the law. He always, he didn't come to abolish the law, he came to fulfill the law. So he does that perfectly. So we consider him as our high priest. He's the same because he's appointed by God, but he's different because he doesn't have to offer sacrifice for his own sin. He doesn't have to do that. But there is similarity in the fact that he can still identify with us. How can he identify with us? So that'd be the question, right? So the high priest was gentle with the ignorant and the wayward because he himself was weak. Right? He was beset. He was held back by these weaknesses. And so he had to offer sacrifice. So he could be gentle with. So God then, who doesn't have to offer sacrifice for himself, he won't be gentle. He'll be, you know, be harsh and you know, you're going to die because of your sin and all that kind of, we're missing something that actually happened to Jesus in his humanity. And that's what's going to be talked about in verses 7 through 10, we'll probably just get there next. Yeah, it's over 7:30. We'll get there next week. So we'll do that one next week. So as you consider this section, we didn't actually get all the way through it yet, but we'll finish it up too. The fact is that what he's doing is saying that how can we have confidence as we draw near? How can that happen? Because that's the let us draw near. Here's the four. Here's the why. Why can you do that? Well, because in some sense, Jesus is the same as the high priest, but in a greater sense, he's very different than the high priest. And he's laying that out. That's what he's doing right now. So in how is he the same? He's the same in that he's appointed by God. He's the same in that he offered a sacrifice for sin. He's the same. We didn't actually get to that today. He's the same in that he offered sacrifice for sin, but he's different in the fact that he is a son, and he is from the order of Melchizedek. Those are two big differences between Jesus and the high priest of the Jews, and those two differences are significant and are things that give us confidence, and we'll talk about the sonship is something I want to talk about, how that gives us confidence. And the Melchizedek priesthood, that's something that gives us confidence. But we didn't get there today, so we're going to talk about that next week too. It's fine. I'd rather answer questions than have people go away and go, well, how does that work? I mean, like Harvey's question wasn't a stupid question at all, because it does, it seems, you take the law, and if Jesus is serving as a high priest after the line of Aaron, then he probably shouldn't be. He probably has violated the law, but Psalm 110:4 is where this prophecy is made about Jesus or the Messiah who would be a priest after the line of Melchizedek. That's the quote is, I think, Psalm 110:4 here in this section. So.